So we've been talking about what the climate movement in Australia has been doing last year and what we learned from it. So I guess this is relevant because a group of Australian activists went over to Bolivia, Cochabamba, last year. And there were some pretty important lessons that can be learned from that summit. So I'm just going to give a bit of an overview about what happened at the summit, the Australian contributions, and the lessons that the Australian climate movement can learn from this. So the World People's Conference on Climate Change and the Rights of Mother Earth, nice long title, was held last year in April in Tiquipaya, in Cochabamba in Bolivia. There was about 35,000 participants that attended the conference from all around the world, although the attendees were predominantly from Bolivia and Latin America. The call for the conference was made by the Bolivian President Evo Morales earlier in the year, in January, and he put out the call to social movements, defenders of Mother Earth, academics, scientists, and people involved in social movements and community movements and governments to come along. And he presented it as an alternative to the Copenhagen conference, which had happened just previously. And they'd seen that as a failure, so this was supposed to be, you know, an improved conference on that. So in Bolivia, climate change, this is the welcoming ceremony. In Bolivia, climate change is impossible to deny. The effects are being seen right now. Bolivia is dependent on water from the glaciers that are there, and climate change is already having a massive effect on these glaciers melting. And droughts and floods are affecting agriculture very seriously here as well. So we see on the right is Chacultaya, one of the mountains in Bolivia, and it used to be a ski resort up until about 5 years ago, and you can now see that the mountain is, the glacier's completely melted, it's gone entirely. So this is a big issue for a country that relies on glaciers for its water supply. So Bolivia has positioned itself really as a leadership, in a leadership role in the climate debate because of how badly it's being affected. It also has a very strong indigenous population. 60% of its inhabitants are indigenous, and they have strong national leadership as well in the form of Evo Morales and the movement towards socialism, the party he's been involved with. So the summit itself, they were made up of 17 working groups which met before the summit online and had online discussions to talk about their recommendations, and they brought these recommendations to the summit where they were hashed out in person. They came up with resolutions for each working group, and these were adopted by the summit, and then the documents were submitted to the IPCC. There were also a range of panels with prominent speakers and self-organised workshops as well. So there wasn't as much discussion about decarbonising the economy at the Bolivian summit as there would be at a summit like this. This is important to consider in a context that Bolivia is the poorest country in South America and its carbon footprint is quite, you know, insignificant compared to a country like Australia's, and it would be very hard for them to do this. So the focus was more on themes of climate justice and climate debt. They used a whole different paradigm and language. There was talk about the rights of Mother Earth, or Pachamama as it's called, and concepts like living in harmony with nature, which would seem quite alien here in Australia to our audience. But they really resonate with the South American audience. So this is a bit of a challenge for relaying the messages from the summit to an Australian climate movement audience, but also it's pretty valuable in gaining an understanding of how the perspective of the Global South on climate change. So there was a really strong Indigenous movement and focus in the Bolivia summit. The traditional knowledge of Indigenous people is really highly valued. And there was the explicit identification of the capitalist system as the cause of the climate crisis, although there wasn't necessarily one clear alternative put. There were some people like Chavez from Venezuela putting forward the socialist as socialism as an alternative, but there was differing views on this throughout the conference. And it was just generally an acceptance of the focus on Indigenous knowledge and ceremony spiritual notions of Pachamama that were prominent. So a bit of a comparison to Cochabamba, which was the conference that preceded this and which was put in contrast to. One of the biggest differences was the inclusivity compared to Copenhagen. So at Cochabamba, there were no secret meetings behind closed doors, and all the proposals and discussions were made and led by the communities on the front lines of climate change and civil society. Whereas out of Copenhagen, we saw the Copenhagen Accord coming out of it, which was a decision that was decided behind closed doors by a select group of countries led by the US and Australia and supported by China, Brazil, India and South Africa. That accord had no binding targets for 2020 and just talked about a vague 2-degree aim for a temperature increase, which, as I'm sure we all know, would lead to climate tipping points being passed and climate disaster. So there were some countries that opposed this at Copenhagen and refused to sign it, including Bolivia and Venezuela, Cuba, Nicaragua and Ecuador. They refused to sign what they called a suicide pact, which was the Copenhagen Accord, because for many of these countries, these outcomes would mean the lack of survival for their countries, basically. And there were political consequences for doing this. Bolivia's climate aid was slashed by $3 million because they didn't sign that climate pact. Ecuador's aid was slashed by $2.5 million. And Ethiopia, who did sign, received $1 billion in climate aid. So to compare the outcomes of this Copenhagen Accord to the outcomes of the Cochabamba Conference, they came up with a people's agreement, which was endorsed by many groups around the world. And the key demands in this were to return atmospheric carbon dioxide to pre-industrial levels, so below 300 parts per million, and to restrict temperature increase to 1 degree Celsius. So this seems like a lot more radical than what was coming out of Copenhagen or anything in Australia, but for them it wasn't really an issue of survival. So they also advocated a development model not based on infinite growth, and wanted to recognise the structural causes of climate change, and also had policies around refugees, indigenous peoples, forests, etc. So this submission was based on the outcomes of the summit, was also submitted to the Cancun negotiations. Unfortunately, it was pretty much ignored and not taken into account. Okay, so just moving on to the Australian climate delegation. About 10 activists from Australia went over to Cochabamba, and they represented groups such as BZE, Yarra Climate Action, Rising Tide Newcastle, Socialist Alliance and Clean SA. We ran a self-organised workshop on Australian coal campaigning. The original aim of this workshop was to build networks with climate activists from countries that make up the Australian coal export market, so such as Japan, Korea, Taiwan, China, India, Thailand and Malaysia. And the idea was to discuss with these activists potential for coordinating international campaigns against coal exports, for example, having simultaneous actions at Australian coal ports or mines, along with a miner or port in Japan, with activists holding up signs saying we don't want Australia's dirty coal, something along those lines. The workshop was well attended, but unfortunately not by the participants we had hoped for, mostly from activists from Latin America, and partially due to the Asian delegates having trouble getting over due to the volcanic ash over Europe, you might remember at the time. So we ended up running the workshop more as an informative one about coal campaigning in Australia, explaining why coal is such an important issue and the tactics used by the climate movement here. And I think we talked a lot about direct action, which is a tactic that many of the delegates were unfamiliar with. So I think they got a kick out of seeing Australian climate activists chained to coal train tracks. And yeah, they were pretty interested by that. All right, so just finishing up in terms of lessons that we can get out of the summit. I think it was really inspiring to see the strength of the movements of the global south and their refusal to accept defeat in the face of massive global inequality and disadvantage. I think we need to really incorporate the themes of climate justice and climate debt into our campaigning. Climate debt being the debt that's owed by the rich who cause climate change to the poor who will suffer from climate change. And these are debts relating to emissions, so our necessity to cut emissions and also to pay back our climate debt in terms of addressing climate migrants and also financing technology and transfer. We also need to analyse the structural causes of climate change, recognise that our current system is not compatible with sustainability, and where we can incorporate the outcomes of the summit into our campaigning. So I think, yeah, as Australia, as the biggest climate criminal, as was very well pointed out at this summit, the climate movement in Australia really needs to stand in solidarity with the people of the global south and continue to fight for climate justice.